Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Poor Old Podcast. What we have here is Peter Rice and my typical partner, Edmund Tremaine. How are you all doing?
I'm fine. I'm poor in spirit and cheerfully wonderful. Wow, what a name. What a name.
You want to know where I came up with that name?
Yes, please tell me where you got that far-fetched name from, Mark.
Well, you know what? It has a little something to do with our special guest. So we would very much like to welcome Aaron Sprinkle. How are you doing, Aaron Sprinkle?
I am well, thank you.
Yes, excited to have you here.
I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, we're coming off the heels of you making a few appearances on our 2017 recap lists. You had an album appearing on some people's favorite lists and an EP appearing on some others. So 2017 seemed to be a pretty active year for you.
Yeah, that was cool.
What have you got going on in 2018 so far?
I have I'm hoping to do probably a solo EP this year.
Okay.
Maybe. Yeah, that's my goal. I'm also playing. I'm playing at least one show at Joshua Fest.
That's a good goal. That's a good.
And, well, I haven't played a show since, I think 2011 was the last time I played a show.
Wow.
Really? Wow.
Crazy.
Of any kind at all. So it's actually a big deal for me. I mean, it's not probably for most people, but for me, it's a big deal. And it's exciting because I'm kind of like thinking about possibly engaging in that at a more aggressive level than I have kind of ever.
Awesome. So,
just want to see what that might be like. But yeah, okay, as far as my music exciting. Goes. Yeah, I'm excited. I got to figure out kind of how I'm kind of wrestling with like the format that I'm going to do. Just because I want to be able to do it solo, you know, without a band for now. And then, but I need to be able to do songs from Moon Traveler and songs from Real Life in the same set, which is going to be challenging to pull off, but I'll figure it out. It'll be fun.
Are you thinking of like mostly just singing over backing tracks, but maybe having like an acoustic guitar or something that you can
of sort of the opposite of that, where I'm mostly just playing with my guitar because that's what I've done most of my life, and then integrating some tracks into the set, but in a way that I'm not really going to try to replicate the record. I'm just going to do different versions.
Yeah.
I've never played solo with tracks ever, so I'm a little bit like nervous about it.
Yeah.
But I think if I can get something sort of, you know, compelling that isn't that doesn't make me look like an idiot.
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
I think you'll manage.
It'll be fun.
I have one awkward experience of playing just solo with tracks, which is way back in ninth grade, this talent show, maybe 10th. Nevertheless,
the dreaded ninth grade talent shows.
The ninth grade talent shows. Ironically, the eighth grade one went better. I had this set of backing tracks that I had been working on, like building songs to, and on like my drive to this talent show was just finishing the lyrics. And then when I got there and tried to play the songs, it was doing it like the unprofessional way where it wasn't like I was listening into the tracks in like in ears with the click going as well. I had just the tracks playing in the speakers in front of me. And so I was playing along to what was coming out of the speakers.
Yeah.
And apparently it sounded all right for the people like in front of the crowd, but the judges who were way back at the, in the audience said that everything sounded out of sync to them. And it's like I wasn't matching up with the tracks at all. So Yay, audio science.
That's always just the fear for me of playing with a track, is that something's going to go wrong.
Right.
I'm not so much worried about like the track going wrong. I'm just worried about me.
Yeah.
Messing up. You lack off from it or whatever.
Right. You lack the flexibility of live musicians to be able to play off of them, and you know,
yeah,
everyone has a group slowing down together or yeah, doing a weird transition or accidentally repeating a chorus where you hadn't planned.
Yeah, my band Fair, we used to use tracks on, I don't know, maybe half our set, because there was a lot of stuff that we couldn't do,
yeah,
you know, live. But even then, if something weird happened, you could just mute them and keep playing, you know, because the whole band's playing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a major thing. But
so Mark and I would love to talk about Blank Books and also the new EP that you're planning. But, you know, we've been planning a conversation, I think should lead beautifully up to that, which I didn't even know that you were working on or hoping to record a new EP, which it makes that even better. So starting off, just to discuss our music collections and to see from three different types of music fans and three people with different relationships to the music industry, mm-hmm, to see like how we collect music and in what ways we love it and display it and keep it and store it. So we'll go ahead, cool, and let you start there, Aaron. What does your music collection look like?
Currently, it is really only, well, actually, I just started kind of going bananas buying cassettes too, but I have at least 75% of the time I listen to music, it's either Apple Music or Spotify.
Okay.
And that's for the sake of convenience, mm-hmm, just flat out. I mean,
yeah,
if I'm listening to music recreationally, I'm either in my car or I am in the kitchen or something.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if I'm going to put on my Sonos or something, I'm going to listen to I'm just going to stream stuff. I have hundreds of CDs. I ripped all my CDs lossless, like kind of right when I saw everything changing.
Right.
And I still have all that. And so I have that on my Sonos, but I'm not listening in an environment where I can tell the difference. You know what I mean? I just can't.
Right.
So, and then I have a pretty decent vinyl collection. I mean, it's not like crazy at all, but it's got a lot of important records to me. And when I'm deliberately listening to music, like if I'm just going to literally sit down and listen to music, which I don't do very often, but when I do that, I listen to records.
Nice.
And then I started listening. I bought a 80s boombox and I have a dozen or so cassettes. And that's really new, like within the last month and a half. and that's really fun kind of background thing. And it's just nostalgic to me.
Yeah.
It's just, that was the way that I consumed music when I was in my most formative time of music was cassette. So
right,
it was fun to like kind of, it's fun to hunt for cassettes that I had as a kid and try to find them and yeah, get them again. And
yeah,
there's just something really magical about it. And even the bad sound, the way that they sound bad is really endearing to me. Like it's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
There's something awesome about it. But yeah, I mean, most of the time that I listen to music, I'm listening to like, there's about 10 records that if I'm going to listen to music, there's like a 90% chance that it's one of the 10 records that I've been listening to for the last however long they've been out. I mean, I still kind of listen to like this list of records at least once a month, maybe more than that.
Yeah.
And I have been for years.
Because, oh, that's so good.
because I use music like a drug. You know what I mean? Like I use it to manipulate how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really simply, that's what it is. And
Interesting.
There's records that there's records that are so much more important to me than I could ever describe to someone.
Yeah.
They're so personal.
Describe it to me.
Well, I mean, and I know everyone listens to music that way. I'm not saying that I'm special. I'm just saying that I'm basically outing myself that if you were to ask me what my top 10 records were, I'd have to say, well, which are the top 10 that I think that you would think were the coolest top 10? Or which are the top 10 that I actually listen to the mm-hmm. most? I mean, those are kind of two different things, right?
Right.
But yeah. But the vinyl collection, I've only been rebuilding for about 3 years.
Okay.
I didn't do anything but stream for years. And then the cassette thing's new. So, but the vinyl is totally not about it sounds better. That's not why I listen to vinyl.
Is it like the experience?
It's the experience.
Putting it on the tray, flipping it over halfway through. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, it's sounding like a record is why I like it. Not that it sounds better,
but it has that crackle.
And warmth. Like some of my records aren't in, you know, they're not mint and I like them that way.
Yeah.
That's how I want it to sound. Because it's just fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm not dogging people that like have legit serious setups and like listen to jazz records or whatever. I think I've heard rigs like that that are mind blowing, you know, but that's just not why I listen to music. It's just a different reason.
Yeah.
Now, I am curious, do you tend to really enjoy listening to music that you've made or you've produced, or do you more like listening to other artists' music?
Or is it
tougher to listen to your own music?
I never listen to music that I produced. Not for fun.
Yeah.
There's a few records that I have put on, and I probably could name them. It's probably like three records that I have. Like maybe put on to show someone and then kind of kept it on and kept listening to it.
Yeah.
But they tend to be records that I have a kind of almost like I can't believe I worked on that feeling about. Like I can't believe I was part of something like that. Like I can still listen to them, or I can listen to them as a fan and not just think about, oh, I remember when we cut that vocal and I was doing this and he screwed this up and I fixed, you know, I'm not thinking about all the production of it. But pretty much the second a record comes out, I never want to hear it again.
I feel you. There's like six songs I've ever made that I enjoy going back and listening to. And part of that is they're songs that like my brother sang on and did most of the writing for. So it's like I'm hearing his voice and not mine. It doesn't doesn't feel like my work as much, and I can forget that I'm the one playing guitar. What are some of the albums that you, of yours, that you would actually mind being on or like listening to?
Probably some of them are not surprising. I mean, like Control, I love listening to that record. It's amazing.
Pedro the Lion. I still remember the very first time I heard Magazine. Like that's one of those unforgettable moments for me.
Yeah, I mean that record. That was the story of how I got to help David make that record is just bananas. And like, it was a blur. Like, I don't even really remember it. So it was fun to listen to that.
Yeah.
And like Phantoms I like listening to that, the Acceptance record Phantoms. Still. Right. That's really nostalgic. Some of them are nostalgic at this point. Cities is very nostalgic to listen to, or mm-hmm. Jonesetta Cruel to Be Young is very nostalgic for me to listen to. That's like still one of my favorite things.
You
I'll just show people.
You didn't make Popularity, did you?
Mm-mm.
Okay. I love both of their albums so much.
I love that record, too.
Yeah.
And it is really fun, though. Like, I don't know, probably 3 months ago, I listened to the first Fair record. And I hadn't listened to it in years.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is for at least me, like, because I'm so ADD and like just crazy that I literally forget things. Like, I don't, if I get enough distance from something, it's like listening to it almost for the first time.
Oh, totally.
And even though I wrote it and played it, I literally don't remember it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's really fun. It's kind of cool to go, oh, wow, that was cool. Like, that's crazy. I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe I did that.
Yeah, honestly, because especially my music is the way that I write and record music. If I don't play a song live after I'm recording, after the recording's done, mm-hmm. I couldn't even tell you what the chords are for these songs because I write them and record them right away, and then I never play them again.
Yep, preach. Same. So, same.
I mean, it's like, oh, that's cool. Like, I'm just like literally making stuff up, recording it all in one thing,
right?
And then it's done. And then I never listen to it again for like 2 years or 5 years or 8 years or whatever. I just was listening to, what was I doing? I was on Spotify or something, and I saw that Poor Old Lou was on Spotify, and I started listening to some Poor Old Lou songs that I literally haven't listened to in probably a decade at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a trip.
I bet.
Really weird. Because I have no connection to that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, not to pat myself on the back or anything. I have this fun project I do where I set aside a full day, and for 24 hours from midnight to midnight, I write and record as much music as possible completely from scratch. And I aim for like fully like composed, produced songs. Not edited or post like post-production at all, but like, you know, full set of instruments. So I usually end up with between 4 and 6 finished songs at the end of the day. But like they're completely new. They're recorded on the spot. Like I wrote them, recorded them, and then I've done this like 4 times and don't remember how to play a single song.
Yeah, that's
from
cool.
Any that's of awesome. Them. Which there's a nice bit of detachment there that helps in a sense. But
yeah,
what's bizarre is that like I can remember so many details about the first 3 times I've done that, but the 4th time is just this like wash. It's gone. I have zero memories of writing or recording any of it, and I don't know
that's
why.
Awesome.
But it's funny.
That's great.
So what ends up happening to that music then? Is it just kind of sitting there? Do you listen to it? Or
one, the very first time I tried it, none of it got released, mostly because it was all garbage. The second time I did it, I actually released it as an EP. And then the second and third times that I did it, even though it was like 1.5 years ago, I've just had, life has been so busy since then that I haven't had a chance to touch it. But now that I'm like moving into this new house with a new recording setup, I'm hoping to get that going soon and edit it all myself, get someone else to mix and master it. And then I'm thinking of just mixing those two together as a full length album.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then my brother, he's about to get married. And like, I just moved out from him and I living together for the past 3 years. So to kind of close our time together, because he and I have also been playing and writing music together for like something like 12 years now. We're going to do the project together. So we have this April 4th set aside as the 24-hour project where we're both going to just go ham at it.
Cool.
And try to do as much awesome. As possible. And that'll kind of be like the big hoorah of our time together coming to a close before he gets married at the end of the month.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Today's episode is sponsored by Jonathan Tekel, T-E-K-E-L-L. Earlier this year, Jonathan released the full-length album Love Me to Pieces, which was birthed out of a season following hand surgery when he wasn't sure whether he'd be able to play music again. Slowly, though, in this time of brokenness, he healed and discovered a vision for how music could continue to have a place in his life. And the music he plays is good, too.
He's quite the instrumentalist in spite of the surgery, with plenty of great guitar and key playing throughout this eclectic collection. The use of electronic elements makes much of the album sound like if Al City focused more on his worship songs, but there's some purely acoustic work too, such as a lovely duet with Jonathan and his wife. Presenting a diverse selection of musical styles to match diverse lyrical perspectives on life and faith, Tekel released this album with hopes that it would make any listener be drawn further to Jesus Christ. Now I'm going to show you a clip of my personal favorite song from the album, Communion, and stick around until the end of the episode to hear the track in its entirety. So here is Communion by Jonathan Tekel.
As we eat this bread and drink this cup, we proclaim his death until he comes, then we'll be with him again. Our Savior, Jesus. We eat
this bread. So, did you get a boombox because you started buying some cassettes? Or did you, like, get a boombox and that kind of started the craze of, well, now I should get some cassettes to play on this?
That's an awesome question and an awesome story, in my opinion. It could be the most boring story that your listeners have ever heard.
Do tell.
I went into one of my favorite record shops here in Tennessee, and I'm kind of acquaintances with the owners. They're awesome people, and they're one of them was like, what are you looking for, anything in particular? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm actually always looking for, you know, I always have a short list of vinyl I'm looking for and in my head. And mm-hmm. I said, I'm looking for this album called Earth, Sun, Moon by Love and Rockets. And she goes, we don't have it on vinyl. And I was like, yeah, I don't think I've ever even seen that record on vinyl before. It's super not a normal thing to see. But she's like, but we have it on cassette. And I was like,
oh. Yeah.
And I went over and I saw it and I was like, super nostalgic. Like,
yeah.
Holding that cassette was crazy. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what are you listening to this on? Like, I haven't owned a cassette, anything that could play a cassette since probably some car that I had, you know?
Right.
And she's like, you just need to buy a boombox. And she pointed and she had this little boombox in the store. And I was like, that's so sick. So she's like, I'm going to give you this cassette and it will make you buy a boombox. And so I literally went home and started looking on eBay and researching and just trying to figure out like what was worth paying money for. Mm-hmm. And then I just sort of like kept looking and narrowed it down to like a category of boomboxes that I was familiar with that either I owned or friends owned as a kid that were also considered to be decent, that were also not ridiculously expensive, because some of them are really expensive.
I bet.
Vintage ones. So I found this one that's super sick and I ordered it and it came. It was perfect condition and I've just been buying tapes ever since.
Awesome.
I ordered some on eBay and then I'll find, like, there was a few that I like had to have that I had to find on eBay and but yeah, it's really fun. It definitely will be like a really fun thing to, like, you know, listen to outside in the weather.
Yeah.
Just be super dope.
The only cassettes I remember from my childhood are Take Me to Your Leader from Newsboys and the Wow 1999 collection. That's all I remember.
Sounds like we might be slightly different age.
Yeah. I don't think I ever had a cassette of like music other than like children's music that I ever listened to, or books on tape. Actually, I listened to a lot of books on tape.
Yeah.
Some of them even recorded by my brother.
Really?
just him reading the book.
Type of person Mike who loves Mulligan the sound of his own voice.
Mike Mulligan and the Steam Shovel.
Oh my gosh, that's really funny.
Well, Mark, what does your music collection look like?
I probably first started listening to music. Well, my brother helped me grow up on Rich Mullins, and I've talked about that in the previous podcast, of course. And I don't think I've ever really listened to audio tapes. We've always had CDs. So my brother would be playing these Rich Mullins CDs, and my parents had some Christmas CDs, of course, you know, Wayne Watson, Michael W. Smith. But my first music that I bought was Newsboys. So, of course, I bought some Newsboys CDs, and Christmases, I would get other CDs. I got the yearly Wow collection almost every single year. Mm-hmm. In the early 2000s, up until like 2006, I think was the last year that I got that. And then I've gotten a couple others on Amazon since then. But no, really, I didn't really have much of a collection to speak of. Mm-hmm. Like, I liked music, but I really never was. Well, let's just say that I would have been out of place being on a staff member of Jesus Freak Hideout until. Again, this something else that we've mentioned a couple of times in this podcast and previous episodes, when I went through that phase in like 2011, 2012, where I just started going ham and listening to stuff.
We all know the phase. Stuff.
We all know the phase. You know, I was in college. I had money, kind of, a little bit. I didn't know what to do with it. So I just, you know, went on Amazon. That was kind of when I discovered Amazon too. And that was a really cool thing. And you know, I would buy used CDs, and I just bought hundreds of CDs. And it also helped my local library gave away like 3 free downloads a week of songs. So, you know, if you're patient, then you could eventually get albums and so on. And through that,
that's cool.
I ended up growing. I mean, the collection that I have right now, and I've added to it a bit since then, and I try to keep up with, you know, the current music, you know, Jesus Freak Hideout staff and whatnot.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I gotta say, I don't think I've ever listened to a vinyl album.
Well, shoot.
Yeah, well, it's all about, it's like, anything past convenience for me is just nostalgia. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, because like if I'm not streaming, I'm just doing something to get to add another dimension of emotional connection to what I'm listening to.
Yeah.
So, you know, my first memories of music is vinyl, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we had when I was a kid. And then cassettes and then CDs. So, you know, CDs aren't, I mean, they do have some nostalgia to them, but it's not as strong to me.
Yeah.
I don't think it matters. I mean, if you never listen to a vinyl, then you're probably not going to buy any vinyl.
Yeah. You're saving a lot of money, Mark.
Yeah, you are.
I am.
Well, but except though, I will say the time that you just said that you bought all those CDs, I probably bought 5 CDs in that entire period of time. I just was done buying
used CDs.
Yeah. So I guess I haven't bought. The only time I buy music is if I buy vinyls or cassettes now.
Yeah.
I don't buy any, you know, CDs or maybe like if I go to a show and I see a band that I really like and they only have CD, if they have a CD, I might buy it. Actually, my wife is the one that does that usually. But
supporting the industry.
Well, I wouldn't. I mean, I wouldn't have even made CDs probably for the Blank Books thing unless people weren't losing their minds that Real Life didn't come out on CD. Like people were really not stoked about that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And were very vocal about
it. So it was a digital only thing?
Well, yeah, I mean Tooth and Nail just decide. I don't really have a ton of say in it.
Okay.
I tried to get them to do vinyl of Water and Guns, and they wouldn't do it. And then for Real Life, they didn't do CDs. They only did vinyl. So.
Okay.
What a difference a couple of years makes.
Well, yeah. I mean, I know that I feel like it was 2016 was the first time that vinyl outsold digital across the board. But.
Like overall or at Tooth and Nail?
overall, yeah, in the world or the US. I don't remember if it was the US or the world, but yeah. Which sounds really exciting, but when you look at the total sales were down dramatically from 2015, it doesn't really, it's not really that, it's just literally going down, but the proportions going to
right, like what's happening is like vinyl sales are going up at a decent rate, meanwhile sales elsewhere are just plummeting. So
well, yeah, I mean people people don't buy music anymore,
right?
I mean, unless they're buying a record, you know, a piece of vinyl, or but I mean half the vinyl I buy is used, so it doesn't mm-hmm. used music doesn't affect the music industry, it only affects the stores that are
yeah
selling it.
Yeah,
that's it. So
so if we're talking about like album sales and whatnot, is that accounting for streams and downloads?
No. Well, that was that statistic was the article I read said all digital purchasable, meaning like if you buy an MP3 or buy a CD. So it doesn't count as for streaming.
Yeah.
Right. Because even technically, I mean, if you look, if you think about it, if you're buying a song on iTunes, you still own something. It's zeros and ones, but you own something, mm-hmm. right? That you can put on a hard drive or throw away or do whatever you want, but it's a possession. And the concept of possessing music is just kind of disappearing.
It's a disappearing world.
Unless unless you can
just keep those coming.
I guess I'm just gonna get used to that. Unless, you know, which I think is actually super sweet that people are not interested in owning MP3s. I would much rather people be interested in owning vinyl and cassettes, right. And even if it's a smaller, because that's just so boring to own an MP3 is like the most boring thing in the world.
Yeah.
Like, and it's just, it's such a pain too. I've had like so much stress about trying to, like when I ripped all my CDs and then got rid of all of my CDs, it was so stressful. Like what if I don't back it up or it crashes, yeah. Then it's all gone. Like it's so great right. to just be able to stream stuff and not have to worry about that. It's funny though, there is, this is crazy though. This, and this comes into the conversation of both topics that we're talking about. I can think of two albums off the top of my head that are vitally, incredibly important records to me that aren't even streamable. Like the CDs are out of print, have been for a long time, and they're not on iTunes or Spotify or anything.
What albums are those?
There's a album from a band called South. And the album is With the Tides. And then this other band called Budapest. I think they only did, yeah, Too Blind to Hear. I mean, there's just some reason. I mean, there could be a reason beyond, you know, popularity. You know, there's licensing issues and label issues that keep records off of streaming. But,
right.
Yeah, they're just sickest records, dude. But, I actually try to like tweet or post about those. I actually don't try to. I actually have to keep myself from doing it all the time. But I let myself post about those two records like at least once a year.
Well, so you're making me want to hear these. Are you telling me that there's no place for me to find them?
Well, I had to buy the CDs on Amazon used.
Okay.
And then I just ripped them and put them in my drive for my Sonos, and then nice. I think I have one computer with a CD drive in it left, yeah, in my whole house. So
are those albums in that group of like 10 albums that you mentioned earlier?
They probably are, yeah. It's probably more like 20 albums to be completely honest, but yeah, they are definitely okay, right. They're definitely in that list. They would yes. definitely be in my, like if I had to make a top 20, I will be honest and say the South record would for sure be in the top 20, and the Budapest probably would be in the top.
Okay. Interesting question, kind of off topic, but I'd be curious if you'd be able to answer it. In that, you know, kind of ooey gooey top 10, top 20, not to say that like you've definitely fortified that list, but can you pinpoint what would be the newest album that might have a place on that list?
That's a good question.
It's like, personally, I always, seems like it's taking, like, all-time classic favorite albums are becoming, you know, rarer and rarer as time goes on. And,
yes, absolutely. I think about that all the time. I actually think about this exact thing, because, like, what does it take for a record to be added to my list? Because I almost have to bump something to add something. You know what I mean?
Like, you have a,
because my attention span is just not... Yeah. Junip, self-titled, from 2012, maybe.
Okay.
Could be on that. I don't know if you've heard that.
I have not.
Yeah, they're a Swedish band. It's Jose Gonzalez. Do you know who he is? He's a singer-songwriter kind of dude. He's really super sick, but this is his band. Kind of Swedish stoner rock is what I would describe it as, but just it's very nostalgic, but not, I don't know, it's hard to say. That, and then gosh, trying to think of anything else that's come out like sort of recently that just has stuck around, and I don't, nothing's really coming. I mean, I'm always listening to really new stuff, you know. I have kind of a little mini list of brand new stuff that I listen to. It kind of circulates around. Like, I'll kind of obsess on like a couple EPs or a couple records, and then I'll kind of move on. And that's sort of, that's half entertainment, half work, you know, because I have to not just listen to the same Bill and Sebastian or Red House Painters or Grateful Dead record over and over and over and over and over, and over again and never like know what is actually happening in the world.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I guess that means it's my turn.
Yeah.
So it's funny, you're talking about like the fear of a computer crashing. My computer does crash on occasion.
Yeah, you have no idea what that's like, Chase.
Yeah, no. Like, I just finished putting together a new desktop setup, which was partially because my laptop, which I've had for 7 or 8 years, is definitely at the end of its lifetime. And part of that is straight up abuse, because I have so filled the laptop with music.
Uh-huh.
That like all the time I get to the point where the startup disk is full and like, oh gosh, what do I need to delete? And of course, you know, 2 years ago, it would have served me extremely well to buy an external hard drive and just put all the music there. And I just never did that. I've been sitting around 10,000 songs on my iTunes on my laptop for a while. And every now and then, like, I'll delete some in order to put something new on. And it's actually been a very interesting over the past few months, as I still buy new CDs fairly often, is that I stopped putting music on my computer over this past year or so. So there's a like a fear, like it seems like I'm risking something, like I've lost my safety net by not putting CDs on my computer anymore and just letting them be somewhere in my house or somewhere in my car.
That's kind of cool. Mm.
I know that, you know, I've had to transfer, you know, my audio files and whatnot. I've from a couple of different computers now. And some of the files that I have, like really old files, you know, from like 15 years ago or something.
Yeah.
This computer that I'm on right now, I bought 2 years ago, and I put all my music on it. And I discovered when I, because, you know, I just loaded everything into iTunes. And there were some songs that I had like 9 or 10 versions of the files, because, you know, you would drag and drop and automatically copy. And every time you bring it, send it to a new computer, it copies again and it copies again. And it's like, yeah, you know what? I do really like House of Heroes, The End Is Not the End, but do I really need 8 copies of each song?
Yeah.
Yes, you do. Right. Well, so the way like our like modern technological minds think, there's this like illusion of safety with technology that really isn't there. It's like I said, my laptop has crashed, and you know, so much time spent putting CDs on here. Like when I bought this laptop in my freshman year of college, I spent the first like 3 days of owning it just ripping my stacks and stacks of CDs onto it. But there was an old computer at my dad's house growing up. My brother and I both had like rare files of songs on it. We were never able to recover the computer. So it's stuff that's just gone. I don't even remember some of it sometimes, but it's like some of the earliest Receiving End of Sirens demos, some like early Thrice demos, some early Gatsby's American Dream demos, just lost to the world. And it's so sad. And if someone has them, probably. But it's also like I think I was saying earlier, like those backing tracks that I used to perform in ninth grade on that computer that crashed.
Yeah.
Which I mean, it's probably for my own health and sanity that I can't go back and listen to the music that I wrote as a high schooler. But still, you know. But I basically have different tiers of interest. And usually my music purchasing is based on how much I like an artist or an album. If it's something that I'm not a huge fan of, or I'm not sure if I like it as much, or I'm mostly just purchasing it because it has like a great price on Amazon MP3. You know, they do like the $5 albums all the time, then digital is the way to go for me. And I always pick Amazon over iTunes. And sometimes, like, I actually probably use my Amazon app on my phone to listen to music more than I use iTunes. And I don't have streaming on the go because I don't have unlimited data. And I'm kind of anti-streaming, but I've been softening on that position over the years, just because, like you're saying, Aaron, with the convenience. But for me, CDs is actually like the primary point of convenience. A lot of my music listening happens in the car. And so my car is just kind of overflowing in all of the hidden crevices with CDs. And it's always fascinating to see which ones really latch on. Because I'll have like 40 CDs in my car, but I might have the same one actually in the car for a month straight. Costly by Ghost Ship gets a lot of plays from me. Types and Shadows by Wolves of the Gate gets a lot of plays from me. I have Kendrick Lamar's entire discography in my car, but those only actually get time on rare occasions or like long road trips. And then there's some cases where some like albums that I might have disregarded completely had I only streamed them once actually gained new life from me because I owned the CD of it. Like the Paris album that came out this past year. I don't think I would have really given it another shot if I had only streamed it.
Yeah.
But because I owned the CD, I purchased the CD because I liked their first album so much. I was like, well, I own it. I'll let it play for a second time. And it actually became one of my most played albums that released in 2017.
That's cool. The way that we are able to discover or be reminded of things is so loaded.
Mm-hmm.
When we could go to Blockbuster and walk around.
Yes.
And then find something that, you know, that's such a different experience than just your completely loaded Netflix menu that you have to. You don't even know what's actually on Netflix. It's just whatever they want you to see, right?
Right.
Or you have to think of something and search for it. It's different than browsing, right? And browsing with like your tactile browsing is so much different than clicking for me.
Yeah.
It's not even the same. And in a way, that's kind of what you're saying is you're able to browse your own collection because it's physically there.
Right.
Taking up space in your car.
Right. The physical nature of the music makes for different experiences with that music.
Totally. Yeah. Because there's definitely stuff for sure. I don't remember it. And that's the whole point of what I'm about to say. There's for sure stuff that I've streamed and thought was super cool, but I didn't remember it. And I never listened to it ever again. And I
was about to
remember it.
Yeah. I was about to make that exact same point.
Yeah.
Mark and I, at the very end of every episode, we have this Made You Listen section where we take turns forcing each other to listen to an album that the other person has never heard before. And so for the most part, like I'm not buying a new album every single week because he tells me to. I'm just streaming it. And plenty often, I really like the album. but then I just move on to something else and usually don't make time to go back to it. Where, and there's been plenty of times where I've discovered something great on like Spotify or YouTube, and if I don't go purchase it, then there's a decent chance that I'll never listen to it again.
Yeah.
You know, the one of my favorite metal bands, they kind of changed my world a little bit, and made me a genuine fan of metal unlike I'd ever been before, was this band called Psilosis. They're like a UK thrash metal band. And The only reason I know who they are is because my brother and I were going down this rabbit hole on YouTube of bands with really stupid band names. I think it started with like the Rabbit and the Bear or some silly like Victory Records band. And we just started taking like recommended videos and going down and seeing how bad music could be. And so we found the Psilosis band. And we're just watching it and be like, this doesn't seem embarrassingly bad. And then it got ridiculously good. And I was like, well, I'm buying this.
That's awesome.
And it almost like, it really changed my entire musical trajectory for a year or two.
Huh, that's cool.
Right, just because of a random YouTube video.
Yeah.
And it if I had reacted any differently, it just would have stayed that YouTube video. And if I had waited a few days before being like, huh, I kind of want to hear that again, I might not have even been able to spell their band name right. So,
yeah, no, I mean, I've definitely had many experiences with vinyl where I actually don't like looking for stuff specifically in record stores. I like just like they always have, most stores have like a section of new arrivals.
Yeah.
I just will look through them and then I'll be like, oh my gosh, I totally forgot about this record.
Yeah.
Wow. And on this huge flood of memories, and I'll buy it and then I'll listen to it again.
So speaking of my music collection as a whole, it's like an overwhelming amount of CDs, probably a near equal amount of digital purchases.
Then it wouldn't be overwhelming.
No, it's just both are overwhelming. and then 20 or so vinyl records that I purchased new, another 20 or so that I purchased used, and then like 4 cassettes. Maybe awesome. 5. I guess I'll finish with just my introduction into the different mediums, because obviously like I've been collecting CDs since probably 2004 is when I started actually like putting whatever money I got into lots of CDs. One of my earliest memories of like a CD that was mine and that I got was Phenomenon by 1000 Foot Crutch.
That is really funny.
And I think I still have that. Like I've rarely ever sold CDs or lost them. Like I keep them all. In college, when I was, you know, like working a lot alongside classes, when I started going to Entertain Mart, like a resale store, and just started like picking up entire discographies of artists. So like every time there was a Michael W. Smith CD that I didn't own, bought it. Every time there was a Barry Manilow CD that I didn't own, bought it. Like I re-fell in love with some artists like The Academy Is or May, because I was like, eh, this album's cheap, I'll give it another shot. But for me, vinyl records started out as just Thrice. And all I wanted was whenever they were repressing some special edition of an album. And then I was in a Half Price Books one day and saw an old copy of Meltdown by Ash. I was like, oh my gosh, it's a vinyl record from Ash. I need this. And so I bought it. And at this point, like I had only been a collector.
You never listened to them?
Had the Thrice records. And never listened to that. I didn't have a record player.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just, you know, to be a collector of the things released by my favorite band. And then now I had this Meltdown by Ash, and it was like, well, Meltdown time. So like that following Christmas, ironically, both my brother and my mom saw this happening, and they both bought me record players.
Oh, funny.
So one of them had to get returned. But they both bought Crossley, which is this terrible brand. Listeners, if you own a Crossley, get something better. They will destroy your records if you use them often enough. It's a all-in-one mechanism that puts pressure on your record from both the bottom and the top. And you don't want that. So what happened was, like, I had this Crossley record player that looks nice, is a terrible machine. And so I didn't want to use any of my new records on that. Like, I picked up, like, The Receiving of Sirens and Jason Isbell. It was really starting to just, like, branch out into the type of records I have, but didn't want to play any of those nice ones on this machine, and still needed to buy, like a nice turntable and some nice speakers to go with it. So I started picking up, like, just old, terrible condition records, like Frank Sinatra, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, stuff like that, and would use the Crossley to listen to those old records that only cost me a few bucks and were already in bad shape.
Yeah.
And so a lot of my vinyl listening experience, probably actually the record I've listened to more than any other vinyl record, has been In the Wee Small Hours of the Morning by Frank Sinatra.
Thick.
And so on the Crossley player, though, which is now used decoratively at my office, it also has, like, a CD player in it and a cassette player in it. I was like, I have the ability to play cassettes.
Oh, that's cool.
My only intention was to own the two American football albums on cassette, because they were pushing those pretty hard when they announced that they were coming back. I was like, yeah, I'll own both. That's a cool thing to have. Like, I can say, like, I own this band's entire discography on cassette. And then with, like, those picking up speed and being sold more, and once again, it's like there were some albums that I wasn't really sure if I wanted to put the money into it or not, but I can save a few bucks by buying them on cassette instead of CD. So I more recently purchased the newest Turnover album and the newest Iron and Wine album, both on cassette. Haven't listened to either.
It's so interesting.
Not listened to either of those albums.
The different reasons, right, are so fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the only... I bought two new cassettes. All the rest of the cassettes I have are vintage cassettes, that's kind of my thing. But I bought both Guardians of the Galaxy soundtracks on cassette because
classic.
That's like the sickest thing ever. They look just like the one in the movie, and
right,
they're awesome. You know, collections of music too. And my youngest son,
marketing move,
is obsessed with those soundtracks. So
yeah,
it was fun, and the movies. We're big fans of all those movies, but. He got to get him on cassette, and, like, that was super cool to him. And it's cool that like my 11-year-old gets to, like, hold a cassette and, like,
right,
like, play a cassette. Like, that's crazy. Like,
yeah,
to me that's like a thing that came when it came back. When it first came back, I was like, why? And I was even why until the other day, like, you know, a couple months ago when I held it, I was like, oh, that's why. Just holding it made me realize, like, why. And then when I got to put that
Love
and Rockets tape in and play it, I was like, oh. You know, it was such a emotional, cool experience. I will say, really quick, I have to say, just because I think it's really funny, I remember the first CD that I bought, actually bought two CDs probably around the same time, same week probably. The first two CDs I bought, and it was in the year 1990 that I bought my first two CDs. And I didn't own a CD player because they were really expensive still.
Yeah.
And my uncle had one that he said, I asked him if I started buying CDs, if I could come over and tape them so that I could listen to them.
Yeah.
That way when I had like, when I finally got a CD player, I would have a little collection built up.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember the first time I saw a CD in my whole life, which was 1984 in the bookstore at Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, in Costa Mesa, California, 1984, which was like almost the year that CDs came out. Like,
right, I actually didn't even know.
Technically, I think they
far.
Came out in 82, I think is when they first started selling CDs, but
okay.
I remember seeing them in there right next to the vinyl. But the first CD I ever bought was Buddy Holly's Greatest Hits, and the second CD I ever bought was The Cure, Disintegration.
Awesome.
Which kind of is a little insight into my music tastes as as a teenager as well. It was all over the map. Like I was,
yeah.
But yeah, I remember like, I have such strong memories of listening to the cassette of The Disintegration that I taped from my CD on my Walkman in the rain, waiting for the bus.
So good.
You know, like,
yeah.
Making mixtapes from record or CD to cassette too, that was, I did that a lot. I made mixtapes for people a lot. And that was definitely, that's another really cool thing about cassettes is their linear like format that they are, you know, is really cool.
That's all for today, but tune in next week to hear the rest of our conversation with Aaron Sprinkle, where we debate the EP versus the full-length album, alongside a discussion of his recent experiences making both. Next week's episode will also feature our regular segments, Is It 5 Stars and Made You Listen. If you enjoyed this first half of our talk with Aaron Sprinkle, we hope you'll subscribe to the show so you won't miss part two. The JFH podcast is hosted by Mark Rice and me, Chase Tremaine. Production, editing, and music is also by me. The podcast is executive produced by John DiBiase and Christopher Smith. If you are interested in sponsoring the podcast, please send an email to christopher@jesusfreakhideout.com. Thanks again to this week's sponsor, Jonathan Teckel. His website, jonathantekel.com, is linked in the show notes, and his latest album, Love Me to Pieces, is available now to purchase or stream. Here's a full track from the album, titled Communion.
Captivity, you came down to wash our feet. You said, this is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. You made with us a covenant, cleared us from your judgment, made us one with you. Strong.